Welcome to Radioactive on KRCL. I'm Lorna Vogt. In today with you on this Tuesday, another very hot Tuesday in Salt Lake City. But hey, global warming is just a fluke, right? Today we're going to be talking politics. We're going to talk about the Senate campaign of candidate Pete Ashdown, who is challenging Senator Orrin Hatch, and the election is this fall. And this is an important campaign for Utah. Senator Hatch made the vow that, well, when he ran for office originally, he wanted to get rid of Senator Frank Moss because he'd been in office too long. And I believe Senator Hatch has now passed that term, Frank Moss's term in the Senate. So we're going to be talking today with Pete about his campaign. KRCL does not make endorsements of political candidates. So this is not... We've invited Orrin Hatch to come on the show either at a different time or to have a debate with Pete, but we're just talking today about politics and the campaign. And you are part of this. Give us a call. Ask Pete the questions you want to ask him. Talk about the issues that are important to you and what you would like to see happen if the changes happen in Washington, D.C. The numbers to call in, 303-6050, 1-888-404-6050, radioactive@krcl.org. And we'll open up the phone lines in about 15, 20 minutes. So, Pete Ashdown, welcome to Radioactive.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Good. Okay, so, I mean, let's just start off... right off the top with, why do you want to run senatorial candidate in Utah against Mr. Hatch?
That's a great question. You know, one of the emails I got early on was from somebody who said, you know, you've got a great life. Why would you want to screw it up by running for office? Right. And I think that was part of my motivation. I feel very blessed to be in the position that I am in. I have built a business here in Salt Lake, X-Mission Internet Service Provider, that has put me in the position where I am able to devote all of my time to a campaign and to politics. And I have felt a great obligation to the community in giving back, not only with X-Mission, but with my time. And I was tired of being on the fence, complaining about the situation in Washington and seeing how things were run. And especially in relation to my own industry, there's been a lot of one-sidedness and a lot of ignorance towards the internet. You know, this past couple of weeks, we saw the chair of the Commerce Committee, Ted Stewart, talk about the internet not being a dump truck. It's actually a series of tubes. And that's the kind of ignorance we see throughout Washington. And I see technology and the internet as something so essential to our economy and our lives that we need better representation back there. So, in 2004, I started considering this race, and I talked to friends and family, and of course my employees, and they were all very supportive, but they emphasized that if I was going to do it, I should take it seriously and get out there early. So in March of 2005, I started campaigning. I declared in this race, and I've been going full tilt since then. Literally hundreds of events where I've met with Utahns, and not just Democrats, but mm-hmm. Utahns of all political stripes, trying to understand what they needed from government and what they wanted to see in an elected representative. And I think as a result, I've crafted a campaign which is unique amongst Senate campaigns today in its transparency, its openness, and its dedication towards the democratic ideal of people participating in the process.
Mm-hmm. You know, and what you probably hear and what people say is, oh, yes, but, yeah. You know, Senator Hatch has... not only name recognition, he's a powerful senator. He's, first name basis. Well, I imagine everybody's first name basis with President Bush. Mm-hmm. Probably got his own nickname now. And he is so entrenched and has the big money forces behind him. He takes tobacco money. He is a powerful guy and has millions of dollars. And you're up against that. That's probably the first thing everybody says to you. So let's just get it out of the way. What do you respond to that comment?
I think why bother is the wrong attitude in American politics. I mean, especially you look at the sacrifice that was made by the founding fathers. I have reflected consistently about Thomas Jefferson writing the Declaration of Independence. He wasn't thinking, I'm writing the Declaration of Independence, I'm going to go down in the annals of history. He was thinking, I'm going to be hanged for this, and my life is on the line. And he's going up against England, who was very powerful, and he thought that it was worth the sacrifice, it was worth the risk. And so for me to stand back and say, oh, you know, Orrin Hatch is too powerful, and why bother, I think is not giving the respect to the people who've built this country and sacrificed so hard for it. It's not near the sacrifice for me to stand up and put my name on the line.
So what are you hearing from Utahns? Utahns have a reputation of being, you know, the most conservative state in the nation, you know, home to probably the most conservative city in the nation, Provo, Utah. But time after time, we see that Utahns will register as independents, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
They fought back against closed primaries in the Republican Party. They've tossed their own on occasion when they felt they've gone too far. We've had a strong Democratic presence for many, many years in Utah, which has changed in more recent years. So what's your response from Utahns when you say you're out in the rural part of the state, anywhere south of Provo, for instance, and just talking to people?
What has been remarkable to me is that living in Salt Lake County, we kind of have this perception of what people are like outside of Salt Lake County. And what I have found is that there are people who are adamant in their beliefs but are respectful of mine as well. And they especially respect the fact that somebody is coming out to listen to them. I can't say that my platform is entirely in line with the Democratic Party because I didn't go to the Democratic Party playbook to write my platform. I went to Utahns to try and decide what was needed from them, and there are conservative elements of it, there are independent elements, and there are liberal elements of it, but I think most importantly, the solutions I try to bring to people and gather from them are not partisan. They're just mm-hmm. solutions. They're effective ways to deal with our problems. And it's very discouraging to see some of the poll numbers come out time after time and feel like I'm not making an impact, but to a large extent people aren't concerned about this race yet.
Sure.
We'll wait until Labor Day to see that movement really happen. And I have been pleased to see the number of Republicans who have gotten on board with this campaign, and it's not just out of weariness with Orrin or some of his actions that he takes back in Washington, his disconnectedness here. It's out of respect for what I'm trying to do. It's out mm-hmm. of respect for the things I'm putting forward. And I'm doing those things independent of any party. I'm mm-hmm. doing them because I believe that's what is right, and people throughout the state respect that.
So why don't you run down some of those issues that start with what you consider or call the more conservative issue?
I think gun control, and mm-hmm. gun control is something that I changed my mind on due to what I talked to people about. And what has been a key issue for me inside technology is this kind of concept of punishing the innocent. That is, if you are downloading music on the internet, then you should be watched like a hawk to make sure you're not downloading copyrighted music, and that companies want to put digital rights management on your files so only you can play them in certain conditions and so on and so forth. I view that as a restriction of consumer rights. I view that as punishing the innocent. And I think what happens with gun control that was explained to me is that it does very little to control the people who are going to break the law anyway. And in essence, it does punish the law-abiding citizens that are have an interest in guns, or they want to keep one in their home for their own protection purposes, and it restricts their ability to do that. And I would like to see people who obey the law and do things in a conscientious manner rewarded for that rather than punished. So that's one of the key conservative issues that I'm out in favor of, is I think the laws as they stand right now are effective but do not need to be expanded further. I think also my taxation issue is I'm a proponent of the flat tax. I like the idea of its simplicity. The thing is that what has been proposed as flat tax in the past is not truly flat. You get mm-hmm. deductions and exemptions in there, and the people with more deductions and exemptions have a less of a tax than the people without. So I advocate what I call the true flat tax, where it's no deductions, no exemptions, and that all income streams are taxed at the head end rather than the tail end, and that simplifies the process greatly.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think taxation has been used in American politics the way abortion is now. It's just a way of, it has been used as a way of capturing attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the issue's been greatly simplified. But the fact is that taxes and the way the tax policy is structured in this country has been used as a political tool since the beginning. And it's a tough one, I think.
And the irony is, as a junior senator, I will probably have little effect on reforming the IRS. It's something that a president needs to take on, and, mm-hmm. and no president seems to really want to take it on once they get into office. I mean, this whole ruse that George Bush went on with Social Security, I think it would have been a much more lasting legacy if he would have fixed the taxation mess so that people were taxed evenly across the board. Now, I do believe, though, that, below the poverty level, mm-hmm. you shouldn't be taxed. I think it's ridiculous to return your taxes back to you in government services in a convoluted manner. You're better off if you keep that money for yourself. And people say, well, if employers are handling all the taxation, then you might get somebody that's actually making $60,000 a year when they're working three jobs at $20,000 a year. Well, if you're working three jobs, you deserve all the money you get.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that as big of a loophole as what we've got now. And mm-hmm. I believe that's the biggest problem in American taxation, is that we have people that are offshoring accounts and offshoring their company headquarters. And so they can effectively avoid paying taxes in the United States as a business. And I believe if you're doing business in the United States, you should be taxed just like every other business in the United States, like my own.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about the estate tax?
It's a form of income to me, and I've argued this point with conservatives where they say, well, it's not earned income. Nevertheless, I believe income is income. It's coming in the door. It's coming into your bank account, and it should all be taxed the same way, whether it's dividends or estate or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So right now, I don't know tax law, but as I understand our tax policy very well, but right now, income above, was it $90,000 or something, is a different tax rate? What is that sort of thing? So the more money you make,
yeah,
in some ways,
you're
exempt.
Well, they want it to be progressive, is that the more money you make over a certain amount, that you are taxed commiserately. And what we've seen in the past is that's not the case. They find loopholes. They have the money to spend on good tax attorneys and shelters.
They pay less.
Yeah, they pay less.
Yeah. Okay. And so what about what would you consider a liberal view?
Well, I think the way I frame my decision on things like marriage, things like abortion, is not so much liberal as constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is wrong to amend the Constitution to restrict American liberty, that the amendments to the Constitution should only affirm American liberty. And in the case of marriage, I view that as a religious construct, and it's up for individual religions to define what marriage is. And I don't think the government should be in the business of banning marriage or affirming marriage. I think government should be out of the marriage business altogether, because the First Amendment of the Constitution states that the government should be out of religion altogether. So the question comes up, well, what about benefits? You know, if the government doesn't enforce marriage, then how do you determine who gets benefits? And I think it shouldn't be the domain of the government either to determine who gets benefits. It should be the domain of the individual, that the individual should decide where their inheritance goes or who has visitation rights or whatnot. And I've talked to people more than once who were in a cohabitation situation that had no relationship on top of it. There was, in one case, a pair of siblings where his sister was too young for Medicare, and yet he could not put her on his insurance because he had no relationship with her other than being a sibling. That's wrong. I mean, the government's saying that this person's freedom is limited to decide where benefits go, I believe is wrong. Now, when you talk about abortion, I think it's also a similar situation where I, you know, personally consider myself pro-life and would try and encourage anyone I knew or I was related to not go through with something like that. But that does not fit every situation. That does not fit every possibility that happens with somebody considering an abortion, whether it be rape, incest, or simply that they cannot support the child at that time. That's up to an individual to decide, and the government shouldn't be making a one-size-fits-all decision for everybody. And I believe that's what the Supreme Court upheld with Roe v. Wade.
You know, it's interesting when I asked you about liberal issues, the issues that come up, and I sort of primed the pump on this one, you know, abortion, for instance, gay marriage was the other one. There are so many issues that I consider very liberal issues that are not in the debate because progressives, liberals in this country, and by default the Democratic Party, has allowed the right to define what our issues are. Mm-hmm. You know, pro-abortion, pro-gay marriage, anti-gun. When in fact, you know, liberal issues, what I consider would be fair wages and yeah. working conditions, an environmental policy that was sustainable. You know, security, national security that actually ensured our security here and abroad by not being antagonistic and actually being clever and strategic and strong at the same time. You know, so it's interesting how I think we allow ourselves to be framed by the other side as having these few, you know, the hot button issues when it actually, that's the strategy of the right, is to use those hot-button issues to tear people apart.
I think a good example of that is the right's use of family values. Now, I believe in family values. I believe in taking care of my children and giving them a good education and being a good parent. But I also believe in business values. I never hear the right talk about business values, which is what you talked about, paying fair wages, building pensions and protecting those pensions, giving employees a good place to work, and absorbing the cost of their health care. These are things that I've tried to do inside of X Mission, and most importantly, I've tried to hold not only my employees' needs but my customers and my community needs above my own. That is, I've had many opportunities to sell X Mission. Especially when the internet was a hot thing at the end of the 90s and 2000, I had many offers, and I still continue to get offers, but I realized those offers, although they would benefit me in the short term, I would get lots of money for them, they do very little for my employees and my customers and my community. So I've realized who has put me in the position I am at, and I've tried to hold those business values as part of doing business, and I think it's what's made me a success. It's what's made me a success in business, and that's what I believe most small businesses throughout America believe in. And small business is the backbone of America. Now, the other thing you pointed out was the ideas of national security and doing things creatively. I'm a member of the Salt Lake Rotary Club, and I am consistently amazed at the good that agency does without an overriding organization telling them what to do. They're in the process of eradicating polio from the planet. In the course of some meetings, they've had Doctors Without Borders come and talk about how it costs $2,500 to build a well that gives clean water to a village. It costs $5 to buy a mosquito net for a child so they aren't affected by the diseases carried throughout the third world. I think it would be great if the American government stood up and said, okay, we're going to sponsor something like this, and we put American flags on those wells, and we put American flags on those nets, and people grow up thinking, you know, instead of this country bombed my family, they say, this country gave me life, this country supported me, this country is a beacon for what is right in humanity.
Great. Well, we're going to take a quick break now, and then when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. This is your chance to ask Pete Ashdown what he would do that first day back in Washington, what it would be like to be senator for the state of Utah. The numbers to call in, 303-6050-1888-404-6050, and you can also send us an email at radioactive@krcl.org. We'll be right back. Radioactive on KRCL. We're going to open up the phone lines now to you, 303-6050-1888-404-6050. Radioactive@krcl.org. Give us a call. Talk about the campaign. We're talking about the campaign between Pete Ashdown and current Senator Orrin Hatch. The election is this November. And it's hot out there, and people aren't thinking too much about the fall, but it's never too early to start thinking about what you want to see in the Capitol. So let's talk about that, Pete. What are the issues? I mean, right now, when you look at Washington, D.C., we've got this horrifying situation happening in the Middle East on so many different fronts.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the gazillions of dollars going out to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator Orrin Hatch is talking about, once again, an amendment, a flag amendment. What do you see as the most critical issues that you would have to address right up front? And, you know, being realistic that as a senator from the state of Utah with this massive political machinery of Washington, D.C.,
right,
you can only do so much. But, you know, let's talk about ideal world right now.
I believe the number one issue before the American people today is energy policy, because it spills into so many other issues. It spills into our economy. It spills into our security. And what was demonstrated by the Senate with their last energy bill was a complete lack of imagination on how to deal with that. The energy bill gave a nod to a few alternatives like hybrids and fuel cells, but overall, the strategy inside that energy bill was we need to go look for more oil. I think the problem we face with hydrocarbon dependency is not just environmental, which is a big part of it, where we have coal-fired plants spilling mercury into our atmosphere and the side effects from that. But we have this dependency on the Mideast, which is propping up dictatorships and monarchies and secret police, and the money that we spend on foreign oil is going to hold it, is going to holding down democracy throughout the world. And Thomas Friedman wrote an article recently about that very fact, that countries that have run out of oil, or Islamic countries that have no oil, are much more democratic than the countries who do not. So I believe that we need a sensible energy policy that does, you know, have things like uncapping wells throughout the United States, does have things like building more refineries, but also puts more resources than what we're putting towards oil towards things like wind and solar and geothermal, and even things like nuclear fusion research, which I believe is the key to our long-term energy problems. There's a group in Sandia working on nuclear fusion, and they're in danger of having their funding cut. And I chalk that up to, again, a lack of imagination. Americans have had a knack for solving the insurmountable problems that face humanity. splitting the atom or damming the Colorado or going to the moon. Americans, when they concentrate on a problem, are able to do it. Right now we have leadership that does not concentrate on the problem. They just continue to perpetuate the old problem. So energy policy is a big thing for me. I've got a lot more detail about that on my website at p-down.org. The second point I think is important these days is healthcare. The healthcare insurance system is failing America. As a business owner, I have seen premiums rise and benefits go down. I've tried to absorb all the costs of my employees' health care, as I believe every business should, but it's getting harder and harder to do that. And when I hear tales of overheads upwards of 40% because of the fight between healthcare insurance and healthcare providers, I think that there's room for the government to come in and fix that.
Okay, great. We've just got a little slew of emails coming in and a call, and rather than me asking you questions, let's get the great radioactive people asking you some questions. So this is Rachel in Sugar House. Did I pronounce your name right?
Rachel.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I actually have a question for Pete and also for you, Lorna. I'll throw out the one for Lorna and KRCL. I'm wondering if you've contacted any of the other candidates that are running in this race against Orrin Hatch, because I do know that there's a Green Party and there's, I believe, a Libertarian and a Personal Choice Party candidate running in this race. And then also I just wanted to know if Pete Ashdown is willing to come out against the war, and I would like him to talk a little bit about that.
Okay, well, let me answer my question first. Yes, Troy Williams, our producer, is getting in touch with everybody. As we get closer to the elections, we're going to start upping the number of shows we do, you know, always trying to get people on to either have a debate or come on alone like Pete is doing today and have a discussion with listeners. So, yes, we'll do that.
Great.
Okay, so go ahead, Pete.
I should add that the one debate I have had so far was with the third-party candidates, and it was on the topic of the war. When I want to first preface my comments with I don't agree with the motivations we had for going to Iraq. I would have not have voted in favor of that. But I think what we've got right now is a real problem as far as not as what's going on over there, but what is going on over here in regards to resolving that problem. We've got one side saying we need to stay the course. We got another side saying we need to withdraw as soon as possible. And this debate goes on and on and on, and nobody makes any progress towards resolving it. And I posed that question on my website. I asked people, well, what do you think is a good way to resolve this debate? What is a good way to cut through to it? And I think this is a good example of the power of collaborating with the American people, because an anonymous American came up with this idea of going to the core of the problem and asking the people who are affected by this every day, the Iraqi people. They know better than anybody in the United States as to whether they need our security or whether we are a hindrance to their security. And in a lot of ways, the Iraqis have had a more successful democracy in regards to turnout than we have in the United States. They are seeing turnout as upwards of 70%, where we're going to be lucky to get 50% in the United States. So what I am advocating is a referendum in Iraq on the issue. Now, just the other day, the Iraqi Speaker of the Parliament came out and talked about how the United States were a problem in the region rather than a benefit. I would like to see it put to the people, if not the Parliament. And if they want us to stay, then I think that goes a lot towards quelling the insurgency and quelling our mission controversy towards being there. But if they want us to leave, we should respect that and leave. But what I think is great about that solution is that it does cut through the debate and gets something done.
Okay. Let me ask, Rachel, what would you support, an all-out, let's get out of there right now? What do you think of Pete's response?
I like that idea. I don't know if it's feasible, and I guess it's hard to do things like that. But, yeah, I would support an immediately withdrawal personally.
Okay. Thanks very much
Thank
for calling
you.
In.
Bye.
Well, let's see. Let's jump to an Elizabeth, email from Elizabeth, who's asking the same kind of question. She said, a few months ago I asked you, Pete, about your opinion on the Iraq War. You took the position at the time that the mortality rate of Iraqis was not as low as Bush stated, but maybe not as high as the John Hopkins census report that deduced that over 100,000 Iraqis have been killed subsequent to our invasion. Have you had a chance to look at the research on this point, and how do you respond to President Bush using media reports as the basis for his lowball figure? And then also, just, you know, you've said the Iraqi people should choose. How can an occupied country realistically register their free will? So a couple different questions right there. Let's just talk about Iraqi mortality rate right now, and then let's talk about the possible referendum.
Well, I think what is being stated there is not the main issue. I mean, I would view the death of one Iraqi as a tragedy, let alone 30,000, let alone 100,000, that we shouldn't have been responsible for any of those deaths. And I think that it was a war of choice. The thing I questioned about in 2003 when we were going to war as, you know, Joe Citizen was the imminence. The imminent threat did not seem apparent to me, even though I didn't have insights to the CIA and the weapons inspectors were on the ground. So I view the death of a single Iraqi citizen over us going to war as a tragedy, and an avoidable tragedy, let alone the Americans we have sent over there and died for this. But quibbling about the numbers is not productive, in my opinion. We need to cut to a solution and deal with it right away.
Okay, and so Elizabeth's second question, it's more a rhetorical question. You know, how can an occupied country realistically register their free will? So an Iraqi referendum, how would that work?
Well, I guess we have to question whether 70% turnout is free will or not. Are these people being coerced into voting one way or another, and I haven't seen evidence of that. And so to be skeptical about whether the Iraqis are making their choice or not, I think let's put it to the test and see what happens. I know that if I had the opportunity to vote in a country where there was an occupying force, I know that I would vote for my independence. I think just about every country would. But the side that demands that we stay in perpetuity.
Okay, we are back on Radioactive. No idea what happened there, folks. Our apologies. We're all convinced in here, personally, it's a conspiracy. Someone sabotaged us because we're getting to a good discussion about the Iraqi war, the Iraq war. We're talking with Pete Ashdown, candidate for Senate, running against Senator Orrin Hatch. And sorry, Pete, I have no idea even where you were.
No, I was talking about whether the vote could be subjective. And
Pete was proposing a referendum put to the Iraqi people about the U.S. forces staying or leaving. So go ahead.
I think what's important, Elizabeth, who asked this question, is to remember that people have a hard time arguing with democracy. What I see as the biggest problem in pushing this debate forward is that it's not moving. And I see the referendum as a possible solution to putting that debate forward.
Okay, let's get one more shout out to the listeners for the numbers here. Please give us a call if you've got questions for Pete and about this race or issues that you want him to address. The numbers are 303-6050. 1-888-404-6050. You can also email us at radioactive@krcl.org. Another email here. This one is from AE. I know one of Pete's main issues is peace. Could he speak of that in light of Israel's recent expansion of war in the Middle East? How does he think that will affect ending our participation in the issues in the Middle East and occupation?
Well, I have a hard time saying that war brings peace. I think that what I have witnessed with my own understanding of people throughout the world is that 60 years ago, my father considered the Japanese and the Germans to be inhumane animals, and they were something that needed to be exterminated off the globe. And I think that's what something that the governments do to perpetuate their agenda of war is to dehumanize the enemy. And I think what is what changes that is communication and understanding. And what, you know, I have relationships with people in both countries now, Germany and Japan, and I would never think of promoting a war against them. And I think we need to continue to promote that understanding, and as a result, we'll have a great side effect of peace. The Mideast conflict, whether the two sides involved there can ever come to an understanding as and a coexistence, is beyond me. I, and that's another question that should be posed and debated on my website. But I haven't gotten a good response from people on that either. It seems to be a real puzzle of how to deal with that situation. I think, in the latest war, Israel was provoked to some extent, but Israel is no, bunch of choir boys either. They have done some really horrible things. And especially in their response. The thing that, is interesting to me is they're wreaking devastation all over Beirut right now and Lebanon, but Hezbollah is firing rockets from these locations that they're bombing, so they share in the responsibility of this devastation. And why there can't be some more control as far as the Lebanese government and the Syrian government towards Hezbollah, I really do think that there's some provocation going on here from Iran, too.
Yeah, this is an incredibly complicated issue. But we've got Aaron has got some questions as well. Aaron, go ahead.
Yeah, Pete, I heard some of your early comments about the energy policy, and I agree with you that we need some more creative thinkers in that regard. I don't agree with your conclusions about despotic rulers as related to, you know, who has oil and who doesn't. I think that's a kind of a jump. But with regard to what you just said about the problems that we're seeing in the Middle East, it's beginning to look like we're going to need a force on the ground in Iraq, because one of the reasons Iraq has been such a failure is Iran. And the largest sponsor of state terrorism even before 9/11 was Iran and Syria and Hezbollah. And you're talking about a group of people who have grown more powerful than, you know, than we could, you know, possibly want to imagine. And talking about this idea about how everybody wants peace, sure, people want peace, but we're both in intractable positions about how we want to live our lives and our cultures. Our cultures are diametrically opposed to one another. You're talking about a group of people where, in Iran, there's even websites where they show the public hangings of people who are as young as 16, girls, boys. If one man touches another man's buttocks or his thighs, he's lashed 100 times. Mm-hmm. The second or third time that he does something like that, he's put to death. You're talking about, you know, withdrawing our troops from an area that's been completely destabilized. And as much as I love peace, I also love the idea that the people who are there are providing protection to the best of our ability. And a lot of the insurgency, it may be homegrown now, but a lot of that came from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. Iran is not going to go away. Iran was present when Korea shot off 7 missiles on the 4th of July. I mean, these are problems that are not going to go away. I think a lot of Americans were so sated and so comfortable in our lives, and we're so disconnected from the idea that a lot of these things that are still being fought for are paid for in blood. And you know what? It's unfortunate, but it's the reality that we live in. If somebody wants to talk about peace, what it sounds to me like is some Pie Town preacher speak. You know, where they're talking about an afterlife of virgins and creams and cakes. You know what? That doesn't square with the world that we live in.
Right.
And so, you know, what do you have to say about that?
Hang a second. Aaron, thanks very much for your call. I'm going to let you go right now so we can get some other callers on the line. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Aaron, I guess the question I would pose to you is, how did we find peace with the Japanese? The Japanese were equivalently barbaric in some of the things that they did during the early part of this last century. What happened in the Chinese with the war in the Chinese and what they have, what how they treated prisoners and so on and so forth. How did we ever bridge the gap with them and reach an understanding with them? Now, certainly there was great devastation that brought that about. Not only did we drop the atomic bomb on Japan, we leveled their cities throughout Japan with firebombing. Now, the question I have for you is that the only way that we can reach understanding with another country? Is it by leveling their infrastructure, leveling their society, and essentially starting over? I would argue that there certainly are elements throughout the Mideast that are barbaric, that do not support human rights, that do not support democracy, but I would also argue that these elements are a minority. That we need to continue to fight against these elements, but we shouldn't do so on our own dime, on our own burden. We should do it as a with our allies on a worldwide basis.
Okay, great. The numbers to call in: 303-6050-1888-404-6050, radioactive@krcl.org. Let's get another issue going in this conversation. Talking with Pete Ashdown today. Pete is running for the Senate against Orrin Hatch. Email from Beth. Orrin Hatch supports the selling of 800,000 acres of Forest Service and BLM land, including some land in Utah. What is your position on selling public land to private interests?
I'm against it. I think that locks it up worse than what we have with the BLM situation, and private interests are not going to work in the public interest. That said, I think that local interests should have a seat at the table. What I've learned throughout touring the state is that these leases go out. There's no accounting for the money that goes in and out, and jobs are not created locally for some of these oil and gas leases. Usually have roughnecks coming in from out of state to work these jobs, and property taxes go up, rents go up, and the locals generally do not see a lot of that profit coming back into their community. So I'd like to see a little bit more local control when these decisions are made, both on the oil leases and on the environmental decisions as well.
Great. Let me ask you, Pete, are there issues that you find yourself in agreement with Orrin Hatch?
Stem cell research is the only one I can point to. And I think Senator Hatch has probably taken this position due to the amount of biotech industry in Utah, and I wouldn't argue with him on it.
Mm-hmm. You think the money he gets from the pharmaceutical industry has anything to do with it?
I wouldn't speculate in that direction. You know, if you want to make that connection, that's up to you.
Okay. Great. Well, we're here talking with Pete Ashdown. We've got just a couple more minutes for phone calls. If you want to get your question in, 303-6050, 1-888-404-6050, or you can shoot us an email at radioactive@krcl.org. And we got an email here from Lucky, not a question, I guess just letting you know. There's a poll commissioned by the British Ministry of Defense last year that found that fully 82% of Iraqis were, quote, strongly opposed, end quote, to the presence of foreign troops, and less than 1% believe that the troops were responsible for improvement in security. And that was on the Guardian newspaper, so if you want to check that out, that's on their website. So let me ask you, this is another one of those, imagine the future kind of questions, but what would you think your priorities would be if you were to walk in January, sworn in as a new senator from Utah?
The first thing I would do would be go back to remove the tax credits to oil companies. I think that is unconscionable, and I've never gotten a tax credit in my business to build out my company. I don't see why a company in a very non-speculative business should get tax credits to do the same. I think that those tax credits could go better towards alternative energies, towards research, and that would be my first priority back there. I also think that there's some reform that needs to happen on this, both the illegal and legal sides of immigration. We saw a couple down in Green River from India who were deported after an INS snafu, and they were contributing members of the Green River Society, and I would work to resolve that situation and others locked up in the bureaucracy of Washington. And then the third point is I feel very strongly about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and its chilling effects and its anti-fair use. I would work to repeal that.
Okay, great. Let's see. Scott, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I'd like to see your dark horse candidacy go farther, because it's interesting to see what's happening in Connecticut with Joe Lieberman. And my question is, I think, you know, one thing that's kind of wild in Utah is, like, you know, we have a really favorable rating of Bush, and when they ask, you know, people down in Utah County what they thought, they said, you know, well, he screwed up on Katrina, he screwed up on the war, but he's a man of God. And so I think that's the biggest obstacle you have. The biggest Achilles heel, I think, that that Hatch has is that he's a hypocrite. You know, he basically talks about how, you know, we're holding up these judges for Bush, and then he just held up one judge after another for Clinton. And then how he initially won his race was that he said that the former senator had been in there way too long, and now he has surpassed the senator that was in there before him, or who I've forgotten his name. And I'd like to hear your comments on that, and I'll take it off the air.
Thanks for calling, Scott.
One of the pledges I'm making is that if I cannot destroy incumbent advantage in Washington, that is through ironing out the financing system, whether it be public financing or an even distribution of funds throughout all candidates, including third-party candidates, and also destroying the seniority system in Washington, that I will serve only three terms. That's a pledge that I'm making repeatedly, and I don't like the idea of term limits. I think they're anti-democratic, but when an incumbent has such an overweighing advantage as all incumbents do, I think that's the only way to deal with it. So I would like to destroy that incumbent advantage first and foremost. I think it's also important to stay grounded to Utah. One of the things I'm also pledging is that I'll keep my house here in Utah and buy an apartment in Washington and not the other way around. My opponent, when he ran for the presidency, declared his candidacy in Washington, D.C., and I think that's very indicative of where he comes from.
Okay. And, you know, one of the things that when candidates come home, well, people who have been elected come home when they're doing their campaign swings and they, you know, go out and do the meet and greets and the barbecues and the kissing the babies thing, they brag about the amount of federal dollars they have brought back to the state.
Yeah.
And we call it pork. But every, you know, one man's pork. there are a lot of good things that have happened because a powerful senator has been able to bring some money home. There's a lot of absolutely notorious, horrifying projects. You mentioned Alaska Senator Ted Stewart. You know, his bridge to nowhere that he got in Alaska, and you know, how do you reconcile that? You want to bring home some federal dollars to preserve some land in Utah. Say you want to bring home some federal dollars for research. How do you do that? How do you balance the needs of the nation and accountable spending practices with, you know, bringing home what's good for Utah?
I think, number one, you do it by destroying the seniority system so the people with seniority aren't getting the bridges to nowhere and the undue treatment, the preference, I should say, towards their own projects. The second point, I believe, and firmly, and this is another thing I've been putting forward in my own campaign, is the ideal of transparency, the ideal of open government and honesty, that people can look into the process and see how things operate. I think part of that transparency issue is the reducing the bills to a manageable size, no more 1,000-page bills. There's a group out there that says they want an act that dictates that everyone in Congress should read every bill that they vote on. I'm behind that. I think bills should be simple and to one topic, and any amendment to that bill should be germane to that topic, and no earmarks. And I think with transparency and small bills and efficient government, that we can do away with a lot of these things and meet the needs of the American people better.
Would you support a line item veto for the president?
I would.
Would you?
Yeah.
What do you think of the fact that he has made his first veto ever? It was against stem cell research, but has signed more than 750 signing statements, which basically say I could ignore any law Congress passes.
I would get rid of the signing statements, executive privilege. I also think things like the War Powers Act are wrong. One thing I would have liked to have seen done with the war was a proper declaration. I think Congress holds that responsibility, and they should have debated this thoroughly and robustly, and maybe if they had done that, we wouldn't be there today. This should not be handed over to the executive like it has been done in so many times in the past. So I think balance of the powers in Washington is very important, and right now it's out of balance.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one last quick question. How has Senator Orrin Hatch been responding to you and your campaign?
Dismissive. And I think that's part of the strategy. It's, you know, there was a comment he made in the paper about a month ago in regards to my business being a little business, you know, a very dismissive lemonade stand kind of thing. And, you know, I've tried to hold Hatch as a human, as an individual in the highest regard. I've tried to hold him accountable for some of the things he's done, and some of the priorities he has had. And I would hope that they would do the same. What I want to see is a robust discussion of the issues, and I am willing to debate him anywhere, anytime.
Well, Radioactive will continue to extend an invitation to Senator Hatch and other candidates, and we will try to keep our own robust discussion going on Radioactive, especially as the elections come closer. So thank you, Pete Ashdown.
Thank you.
For coming in today. Radioactive is available on our website. You can stream and now podcast at krcl.org. Radioactive is produced every single day by Troy Williams and assisted by a great staff of interns, volunteers, and other staff members at KRCL. Kudos to them. Tomorrow's going to be a great show as well. Nick is going to be talking to Francis Moore-Lape about the U.S. meat industry. Thanks very much for listening to Radioactive on KRCL. I'm Lorna Vogt, and stay tuned now for Counterspin.